Hi, I'm Chelsea Stickle, and my favorite thing is embroidery.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hello, and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and this is the podcast where we learn about people's favorite things and get recommendations without using an algorithm. This week, the year is off to a great start, and that means authors have books coming out in the world. So this week, I am very happy to welcome author Chelsea Stickle to the podcast. Chelsea, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's been a very, I'm in Chicago, where yesterday we had sunshine, like the first sunny day possibly in months. And today it is dark and rainy the whole day. So I'm really glad I actually got outside yesterday, but I'm good. Yeah. Where are you generally located?
I'm in Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay. So that's the
State capital. Yeah.
State capital.
Yes.
But is it, Annapolis is considered like the DC area, or is it far enough away that it's its own?
It's funny. So I grew up in Northern Virginia. Mm-hmm. And if you had told me back then that Annapolis was part of what's now known as the DMV, I definitely would have laughed in your face. But it seems that the DMV has expanded over the years, and Annapolis is included now.
Okay. But then that was that, I'm going to say that's where my confusion comes from.
That's fair.
I'm in my 40s, and I'm like, when my friends like have been moved in and out of DC, it's kind of like Arlington. A lot of them go to Arlington, Virginia. Mm-hmm. But Annapolis is like a naval base, right? There's a big Navy's there.
Yeah. The Naval Academy is there.
Okay. All right. The podcast isn't just for me to do geographical trivia, but sometimes I like to work out future bar trivia questions.
Oh, yeah. No, this is where the Naval Academy is. It's
okay.
Probably the biggest draw other than the legislature.
Nice. Is that it? No, you just said you grew up in Virginia, so you are not from there.
Ugh. Yeah. So I do know Arlington. I grew up in Northern Virginia, so that is familiar territory for me.
Outstanding. So we were introduced because you had a new chapbook come out last week called Everything's Changing. And so you have a publicist who introduces me to so many wonderful authors and truly has like changed who I talk to on this podcast. And I love it. tell me a little bit about Everything's Changing.
So Everything's Changing is my second chapbook. And I was lucky enough to secure Lori Heller as my publicist. So I actually get to talk to people about my chapbook this time, which is awesome. It's published through 30 West Publishing. They're great. Josh Dale is the EIC. He hand makes every single book himself, which is incredible. The book itself was long listed for their contest. And they're like, hey, you want to publish with us anyway since you didn't win the money? And I was like, sure, that sounds awesome, let's do that.
I mean, the goal of entering those types of contests is to get published, so you did win.
It is.
Right.
I did not win.
You did not win the contest.
I did not win the money. That's
okay.
It's like, it's money plus publication, and it's the second time that I have been the bridesmaid, but not the bride.
Okay.
My first chapbook was also like that, where I entered a contest and I didn't win, but they wanted to publish me anyway.
Okay.
Which is, you know, totally normal, because this stuff is so subjective, and I've been in the slush for years reading for people, and it's just whoever happens to be reading that day.
Mm-hmm.
But so my chapbook is about chaos. Like, you can really see the chaos of the Trump years in it, because that's when most of the stories were written.
Okay.
And it's funny because people have been asking me about the chaos during interviews, and I was like, yeah, you know, it's probably that. It's that. It was the beginning of the pandemic, and I was like, okay, everything is just completely off the rails. and reality doesn't make sense anymore. So mm-hmm. let's get a little surreal. So all of the stories in the chapbook are surreal, fabulous, absurdist. Nothing is normal in this book. Everything is weird.
That helps answer my next question, which was, are they essays? Are they, so they're short, they're surreal short stories or surreal short fiction?
So they're flash fiction. And
okay,
for people who don't know, flash fiction is anything that's 1,000 words or less.
Okay.
This chapbook in particular is very heavy on the microfiction, which is 400 words or less.
Okay.
Which is great because, you know, you can really have a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Getting like really weird and surreal and under 400 words. There's just so much room to play there.
So few people I know hear 400 words and so much room to play. I can do anything with just 400 words. I love that. It's the constraint. The constraint kind of gives you freedom.
Absolutely. And you don't have to worry about like world building in the same way as mm-hmm. you do with longer stuff. Like, when you think of like sci-fi novels, like mm-hmm. how much of that is actually world building? And that's never really been something that I'm super interested in.
Okay.
I'm more interested in like these micro moments between people.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned it captures some of the chaos or lots of the chaos. Where did the writing and conception of this chapbook land with COVID in particular?
So when I started writing flash fiction, I started writing mostly realism because that's what I was used to.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything went to hell in a handbasket. And I was like, you know, it's there's room for some weird here.
Like mm-hmm.
There are things that you can't. There are things that are harder to talk about when you come at them directly.
Yeah.
And coming at them from the side is much easier.
Okay.
And when it comes to COVID in particular, I have this story that's in the chapbook that was also in Chestnut Review. And it's called, Am I the Asshole for Falling Apart at a Dinner Party? And it's a take on those Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
Those Reddit questions. And in the story, it takes place during the pandemic after a group of people has been vaccinated for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty privileged group. Mm-hmm. So they've all been pretty much fine during the pandemic, except for the narrator. The narrator is falling apart.
Yeah.
Except she literally falls apart. Like her entire body falls apart.
Like pieces are falling off.
Like pieces are falling off.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I go hard on the Google there. You know,
yeah.
Like she does lose her nose at one point. So
whoops.
Yeah. You know,
yeah.
I do like when metaphors get really literal.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel like you're falling apart, sometimes you actually are.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was, so some pieces were written during COVID and some of them are during the general hell of the Trump years. A lot of overlap there, I know, between the lockdown and the Trump chaos, but.
Yes, there is definitely some overlap there. I think there are a couple that were written at the beginning of the Biden administration.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't thinking about any of that when I was putting this together. I decided early on that my first chapbook would be realism.
Mm-hmm.
And my second one would be all the weird stuff.
Okay.
And I did that on a really unconscious level, so I wasn't really thinking about what I was doing. But once I sat down and put them together and I read through what I had, I was like, oh, that's what I was doing.
Mm.
Yeah. No, my unconscious is much smarter than I am. So I definitely, I trust her as much as I possibly can. She's got the wheel.
Yeah.
She knows what's good.
What's that process like for you? Are you someone who, do you print out all your stories and move them around physically on a table? Or are you like a Dropbox moving files around kind of person?
I definitely need to physically hold them in my hands.
Mm-hmm.
So I print them out and I actually put them on the floor.
Okay.
There were so many in this one that I had to print them out and put them on the floor.
Yeah.
Because when it comes to like ordering, mm-hmm. I want to physically see how one story ends and how the next one begins to make sure that they're in sync. They're not just in sync, like, subject matter wise, which is what I look at first when I print out the order, but also that they naturally transition into each other.
Mm-hmm. Were there any, do you remember any that were like really hard to place or that you were just like, you're for the next one?
Those are stories that I cut.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If I can't think of a good place for you, you probably don't belong.
Okay.
And there's probably some other red flags in there too. Like, yeah, in this case, it would be like, the story isn't quite weird enough. Like, it's a bit odd, but it's not full weird yet.
Okay. This is just because I don't know much about chapbooks. I've been learning more about collections as I talk to different authors. So then when you submitted it, was it the full manuscript in order, or are you submitting like, here are three representative pieces?
You submit the whole thing.
Okay.
You want to be as close to publication ready as you can possibly get.
Amazing.
So like, you even have like sample acknowledgments that include where everything has been published.
I guess, right. With microfiction and flash fiction, the chance that it is a republication is much higher. I mean, not necessarily a book of poetry, but a novel.
Right? Oh, yes, for sure.
Isn't going to have, because we aren't all Charles Dickens writing in serial, right?
Getting paid by the word, I wish. Right. That sounds amazing.
It would be amazing.
I'd have to stop writing flash fiction, though, and start writing some long and twisty novels.
You'd have to get into the world building a little bit more.
I can do that if I'm getting paid by the word. So when you set me up, I'll do it.
Are you doing or have you done any events to celebrate the publication?
I think there's supposed to be a release party with me and another 30 West author who's also getting published this month. But I don't think there's a date for that yet. But it will be on Zoom. So it will be
nice,
available for people.
Outstanding. And people can find that on your website, I'm sure. When you know the date, they'll know the date.
Exactly.
Great. Great. So everything's changing from 30 West Publishing. Are people still able to get copies of Breaking Points, which was your first one?
Absolutely. You just missed a sale for it, though.
Listeners can pay full price.
That was through Black Lawrence Press, which is a delightful press. They have so many, they have just like a huge stash of amazing chapbooks just waiting for people to find them.
Mm. Nice. And have you been able to, with your new book, since the editor is handmaking all of them, Cowboy, sorry, my cat is like, I need to cuddle and also knock over all of your pill bottles. So he's being a little nosy. So with the editor, hand making all of the chapbooks, have they all been made, or does he make them? It's not print on demand because they're handmade, but like, does he hand make on demand, or does he have a few weeks where he goes to his workshop and makes books?
That sounds like a better question for Josh than me.
I'll ask Josh sometime.
He does make enough that I think for a while he has like a stash and then he makes more.
Yeah. So you've been able to hold a hard copy.
I actually haven't held one yet. They're coming tomorrow.
Oh my gosh.
It came out on Friday though.
Okay.
So it's fine.
And today was a federal holiday, so
it was a federal holiday, and I think I know my mother placed the last minute order, and she might have accidentally sneaked my copies. It was quite a large order. But that's okay.
Okay, but people can order now. It's available, and there will be a launch event on Zoom coming soon to a Zoom near people.
TBD. Yes.
TBD. Awesome. Well, Chelsea, I'm really excited for your book, but I'm also very excited for learning about some of your favorite things. What would you like to talk about, or at least kick off with tonight?
Let's start with embroidery.
Okay. I feel like I have seen a needle possibly come up and come down as we've been chatting. Is that fair?
That is absolutely fair, yes. Okay.
So embroidery is a, I'll tell you what I think I know and then you can fix me.
Cool.
Fix my assumptions. I think embroidery and cross stitch are different. They're both like, or they're not. Maybe they're not different. Is embroidery... now I feel suddenly like I don't know.
That's okay. I am obviously not an expert in embroidery.
You make images by stitching thread on fabric. That's what they have in common. Right?
Yes. Okay. Again, not an expert, but I consider embroidery anything that is not like essential to the construction of something.
Okay.
So like if you're doing anything that's decorative,
yes,
that is embroidery.
Okay.
Sometimes they're images, but I started off doing shishiko, Japanese embroidery, which is actually what I'm doing here, which is geometric patterns.
Ooh.
So sometimes it's just lines.
Yeah.
But really cool lines.
Really cool lines. Really cool. Well, let's time travel a little bit, Chelsea. And when did you first get into embroidery? Or so, sewing that led to embroidery?
So my grandmother sewed when I was, well, she sewed her whole life. She made clothes, which is really cool. She made like all of her own clothes. So I learned the very basic stuff from her. Like she taught me how to make a bag by putting cloth over a cereal box. Like that's clever.
Yeah.
Right? It's great. If you're like 7 years old, it's perfect.
Yeah.
But she died, so I never learned anything more than that. And I always had an interest in embroidery. I liked making things growing up. But I was discouraged from embroidery because it was deemed too difficult.
For children or for you?
I don't know. At that point, I was like older, but still.
Yeah.
I was not 7 years old trying to embroider stuff.
Yeah.
It was fair. It does require a lot of attention that I'm not sure I could have given it back then. But I did want to do it. And I kind of like internalized that idea that I couldn't do it. Eventually, I became an actual adult and I didn't care anymore. So I got myself a set of floral kits on Etsy. And I was like, that looks pretty easy. I can do that, right? And that's what I did. I stashed them in my closet for a year.
Sure.
Because I was like, I don't know if I can actually do this. I don't want to mess it up. And then the Rolly happened. And I didn't have any rage left in me. But I did want to do something.
Yeah.
So I started, you know, stabbing cloth with needle. And
yeah.
I made some really cool shit. And then I just couldn't stop. It's such a great thing to do, especially with my ADHD. I feel like fidget spinners are never enough for me.
Yeah.
But like following a pattern is enough.
Yeah. And you can make an embroidery project can be as big or as small as you want to like hyper-focus on it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've made handkerchiefs, which are actually useful.
Nice.
I make these really... Oh, that's actually what I'm making now.
Is that what you're making now? Yeah.
Yes, I am making one for my mother's birthday, which is very soon. And I've made handkerchiefs for myself. And I do appreciate that it's like a greener way to do things, too. I like not having a house full of tissues.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's... My grandmother also and my great aunt sister were sewers. My sister, who is my grandmother's sister, so we called her sister. I have a quilt of hers that is made of the leftover polyester from her pantsuits. It's a scrap quilt of all of the polyester leftovers.
It's amazing.
From the suits, yeah, that she made herself in the 60s and 70s. I love it. Or 70s and 80s. But when they would get together, they were both constantly, they crocheted, but like the lace crocheting.
Oh, okay.
So they always had these baskets of tan crocheted doilies and lace and just intricate patterns. And that I never learned how to do that type of crochet from them, but did learn a basic chain stitch to be able to, you know, I can make a scarf with the best of them. Once you started stabbing away some of the rage, were those, so how did you get from like floral patterns on Etsy to this type of Japanese embroidery that you're doing?
So I started with the floral because it seemed easier somehow.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't realize that I could do shishiko. Like, it just didn't seem within my reach. And in fairness, it is harder to get these kits in the U.S. You do have to, like, you do have to track them down on Etsy. You can't, like, walk into a Michaels or whatever and get a kit for this. But once I actually started, it is actually the reason why I joined Instagram. Because on Instagram, I could see all these people doing shishiko in front of me. And, like, I learned how to embroider from watching videos, because there was no one to teach me, there was no manual, and it's just the visual medium is so helpful for me when I'm learning something that's so kinetic.
Yeah. Shishiko, I had never, I don't think, heard of before 10 minutes ago. Tell me a little bit more about it.
So they're geometric patterns. They're usually designed around representing something from the natural world.
Okay.
So you'll have like really common patterns that are like waves, or like, I think one's like an autumn breeze. Like, they're very circular. I know the one I showed you was very boxy, but they're frequently very circular. Very square based. There's a whole history there that I am certainly not an expert on, but it was, I believe, originally a way to, like, repair clothing. Like, if you couldn't afford to buy something new, you could patch something in.
Yeah.
And you would use that pattern to make it more beautiful.
Okay. I just did a quick... I typed in shishiko, and Google was, like, mending. I was like, okay. So... this pattern that what you're doing for your mom, the handkerchief you're working on now.
Yeah.
Is it, it had some lines that look like kind of sketched on. Is that going to be, for example, on that one, embroidering only the lines, or are you going to fill in all the squares?
No, you only do the lines. So traditional shishiko is an indigo cotton and typically a white thread.
Okay.
Sometimes red. And this one I've chosen this red color because she loves red. And hopefully she likes it. Fingers crossed.
Chelsea's mom, don't listen until after your birthday. Spoiler alert.
Yes. Yes, so you only go along the dotted lines.
Okay.
I mean, there are some badass people who don't need those lines, but I am not one of them. I need a guide so that I can stitch in a straight line.
Oh, there's no way. There's no way I could hand... I can... on a machine, I can barely do a straight line. That's, you know, to imagine being able to do, like, a whole... I mean, a handkerchief is, like, a one-by-one square or so... like, to be able to do that without having the lines already on the fabric for me, it would be, I couldn't, there's no way. For me, I couldn't do it.
I mean, I think if you had enough practice and you like really wanted to do it, I think mm-hmm. you could do it. It's just, you don't need to do that. You don't,
right.
You don't need to do that.
Yeah. And what has your, are you someone who always has an embroidery project going now since you've gotten into it? Is it something that you have, do you have five projects that you're parallel pathing? Are you? Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have multiple projects going at the same time always.
Okay.
So I decided to do what's called a stitch along for this year.
Okay.
Which I started last year because it's this massive, it's like a 12 by 12 bookcase, and it has like all these little things on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I cannot start this in 2023. I will die if I mm-hmm. start then. So I started early and I started doing the bookcase.
Uh-huh.
And what you do is for every day, you actually look up the temperature and you stitch in a color that is coded to the temperature.
Oh, I've seen people do those blankets.
Yes.
So this is a bookcase.
This is a cross stitch bookcase. Uh-huh. And I stitch a book for every day of this year.
Wow.
It's actually really fun.
Is it on a big hoop?
It is on a big hoop, yeah.
Yeah.
But I also, so that's my big project for the year.
Okay.
I have smaller projects. I have this guy, which is pop art.
Nice. I recognize her.
Yes, there's another woman, and she's saying, quick, smash the patriarchy.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's just a little bit of fun.
Yeah.
And then I also have one that I started around Halloween and didn't finish, which is mm-hmm. a skeleton reading a book. I was like, this is very me.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
I wonder if you've seen her. There's a woman on TikTok who last year did essentially like an icon or an emoji for every day of the year. It's this big circle hoop and it's like every month is a wedge, like it's a clock. And within the wedge, she does like, if today was MLK day, she might do a very tiny MLK bust, or she might do if she had pizza yesterday, she'd do like a slice of pizza, and she fills the month with like one icon for every day of the month. And she does it for the whole year.
So I've seen smaller versions of that. I have not mm-hmm. seen hers because that sounds bonkers. I will look her up after this because that's incredible. But I thought about doing a smaller version of that for this year.
Yeah.
Where I didn't have to do one for every day.
Mm-hmm.
But I decided I didn't know. I only just started cross-stitching and I decided I didn't know enough different patterns and shapes for things that mm-hmm. I would trust myself with that. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really, it's such an interesting way of keeping a diary.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's really, it's so interesting because she doesn't, I don't think she does TikToks necessarily every day of it, but I saw enough of it throughout the year to kind of track her progress. It was very cool.
Yeah. So, again, not an expert in embroidery, but I think she just does regular embroidery. Does she do cross-stitch?
I think it's regular embroidery. I think cross-stitch would take an even bigger space or tinier thread.
Oh. Those are so cool. I love just, like, the basic regular style of embroidery.
Mm-hmm.
I started doing Kricky press kits from last year.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is a lot of them are just like actual like tiny dolls.
Oh.
So I've literally made like tiny fox dolls.
Yeah.
And I'm actually giving one away because there's a fox story in my book and there's a raccoon story in my book. And I made like tiny little dolls for it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Hearing it out loud, that does sound a bit crazy.
It doesn't sound crazy.
They're handmade, adorable.
Handmade merch to go with your handmade chapbook? Oh, so terrible. Cute. What a terrible idea.
But they sell, like, really amazing kits. I know the woman who runs it does that screen printing on cotton mm-hmm. so that you can put in a hoop and you can, like, do details on smaller stuff, too.
Oh, interesting.
And it's completely taken over my holiday decorations. Like, every holiday, there is a Kariki press kit for it. I've got, like, a gothic crow that's, like, black work, and I've got, like, a black work mansion scary Victorian thing. It's really fun.
That's awesome. And through Etsy and Instagram, you're able to find the people that help sell the kits to point you on your direction.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty solidly quirky when it comes to regular embroidery, but when it comes to, like, cross stitch, mm-hmm. I do kind of, like, search for what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. Like, I decided I wanted to do a pop art one. So then I just, like, typed in pop art cross stitch, and then a bunch of different patterns show up, and I'm like, nice. Okay, let's do it.
That's awesome. I did one cross stitch. Well, I did one 10 years ago. It's about time to do another one. Where it was an inside joke with a friend. I had been learning Hebrew, and I had learned the alphabet, and I was so proud of myself. I was like, I've learned everything from Aleph to Zion. But Zion is, like, the fifth letter of the Hebrew alphabet. It's not the last letter. So I made him a cross stitch that said from Aleph to Zion in Hebrew. Just, like, really just doubling down on an inside joke by cross stitching it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I was pretty intimidated by cross stitch.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started embroidering, like, it felt, I had no idea how to do it. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know where to start. I was like, there are all these holes. I don't know what to do. And YouTube saved me.
Yeah.
I saw a video of a guy making a ladybug. I was like, this is extremely accessible. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And now I know how to do this based on one video.
That's great.
So I purchased this kit before I actually knew how to cross stitch, because I was like, this is the kit that will force me to learn cross stitch with no fear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a floral wreath. And in the center, it says, carry yourself with the confidence of a mediocre white man.
Outstanding.
And now it is framed on my wall.
Outstanding.
If that is not the secret to my success, I don't know what is.
Yeah. You just have to just say, would a mediocre white man do this? The answer is always yes.
Exactly. I mean, always even, yes. Even if you do that half the time, you're still getting an absurd number of opportunities that you would have missed.
Yeah.
Like, my first chapbook, I didn't think they were going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
I did not believe that at all, but I was like, you know what? I did it. I put it together. These stories are well published. They were nominated. I'm just going to see what happens. And they wanted to publish it. And that's kind of been my approach this whole time. I was like, they take it, that's great. If they don't, I will definitely survive. I have literally hundreds of rejections behind me.
Yeah.
Like, I have rhino hide. But I also have, I've had way more acceptances and opportunities than I ever could have dreamed of. And it really does come down to just asking and applying, and, you know, things actually do happen when you try.
Yeah. Yeah. I do find that giving them the opportunity to say no instead of saying no by not submitting makes a huge difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think the nice thing about embroidery versus, like, knitting or crocheting is that it can take up less space. Not that it should take less space. Things should take up space. But that when I think about, like, potential crafting hobbies I could get into, it seems to be one where at least you buy the thread in smaller. It takes up it's less volume. How about that?
Absolutely. One of my grandmothers sewed the other crocheted.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I learned from her is that when you start like a blanket, which is what she always did afghans, mm-hmm. you have to buy all of them from the same dye lot, right? Right. So you do have that pile of yarn, and it does take up a lot of space. Mm-hmm. The nice thing about embroidery is, you're right, it doesn't take up as much space. I started off small, but then my eyes got bigger than my hands.
Sure.
Some version of that. So when it comes to like cross stitch, I did end up getting one of those like container things where mm-hmm. you have like the bobbins and everything is wound and there are numbers nice. On things. I know, it's very organized. It's very much not what I'm actually like. So it's mm-hmm. kind of nice looking at that because my Shishiko stash is a giant bag stuffed with thread and cloth and projects. So I'm not allowed to buy anymore until I make a bigger dent in those.
Fair. So you have your bookshelf, your temperature bookshelf. Yes. Is a big project. Are there other, you know, when you look at your stash, are there other projects that you're imagining doing with the supplies you have?
Yes.
That absolutely. You would talk about on a podcast, or are they yes. secret presents? Okay.
No secrets. I feel like everyone who knows me now knows that I have this agenda of handkerchiefs.
Okay.
So, like, yes, I have a stash of handkerchiefs that I'm going to make for myself and other people.
Outstanding.
If you know me, you are going to get one or have already gotten one because they're beautiful. And if you don't want to use them, you can frame them. I mean, right. it works as a piece of art. But, hey, maybe you're going to cut down on your Kleenex consumption. That yeah. would be great. So I've got those and I've got a bunch of those.
Nice.
Which I am excited to do. And I downloaded this cross stitch pattern. There's this store on Etsy called Grandma Be Wildin.
Okay.
Yes. The name Amazing. The name is a great indication of what you're gonna get. So she does basically a bunch of like goth stitches.
Uh-huh.
I'm not entirely sure what makes something a goth stitch, but basically like darker themes and mm-hmm. patterns. I think the first cross stitch I ever finished was from her, and it says "Wash your damn hands." And they're like flowers, and it hangs in my bathroom downstairs, and it's like nice. This is my polite way of saying, use some goddamn soap, people, please. Mm-hmm. But she does amazing stuff. And one of the ones that I'm doing next is, I got this like very fancy stretch of Aida cloth, which is kind of like dyed purple.
Okay.
It's like sort of like marbly. Mm. And it's actually a take on the Morton Salt Girl.
Okay.
So she's like dropping salt behind her. I think the pattern originally says stay gothy, but mm-hmm. I'm going to go with stay salty.
Perfect.
Yeah. I was like, this is exactly what I want. I'm very excited about that.
I love that. We had a big Morton Salt Shed in Chicago that this year became a venue. Like, it's a music venue. The Morton Shed is a new music venue because a couple years ago, the wall broke and the salt came out and covered a Lexus dealership.
What?
It was amazing.
That is amazing. Oh my God.
It was a great day on Chicago Twitter when the salt, like the wall of like the salt shed broke. And it was just like salt avalanche onto the McGrath Lexus lot.
I mean, someone has to have written flash fiction about that. And if they haven't, they should. So.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It was great. And now it's this really cool venue. Because we love the Morton Salt Girl in Chicago. So that'll be a great. That's a great project. I love it.
Well, so this Morton Salt Girl is dressed more like Wednesday Addams.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got fishnets, and it's delightful.
Amazing.
I am very excited for that.
That's great.
And I'm going to finish my pop art and the skeleton. I feel like I had other stuff. I have other, like, tiny dolls. Like, there's a pigeon one that I want to finish.
Mm.
It's actually really beautiful. I know you hear pigeon and you're like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the pattern itself really leans into like the iridescent colors on their chest.
Yeah.
So it's like really vibrant, like emeralds and like royal blue and that purple. And the stitching is kind of like blackwork.
Okay.
A lot of it is. And we haven't talked about blackwork yet. But blackwork, blackwork is beautiful.
Okay.
It's really tight geometric patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes from England. I can't quite remember the era, but they would use it for like sleeves on the end. And they're just like these really intricate patterns. And it's all usually in black, which is why it's called black work.
Okay.
Sometimes it's in white, sometimes it's in red, but it's traditionally black. And it's just gorgeous. It's like Art Deco, but more gothic.
Yeah. And so it would be, it would like probably strengthen the hem also, right? At the end of the sleeve, so they wouldn't get ratty, I would imagine. Like if you put like a whole...
I don't think they used it that way, because I think if you could afford black work, you were super rich. Like, it just, it takes
you weren't getting, this dress wasn't going into the dishwater, you're saying?
Yeah, no, no, no.
Fair.
It takes, because it's like, it's tiny, like the pattern is like much smaller than an inch. It takes forever to do, which is why I've only done like small medallion type stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, if you could afford black work, you were like in the king's court.
Okay. I think I'm just, you know, just doing a quick Google image search. And I think a friend of mine last year did like a year long black work sampler.
That's amazing.
Maybe not a full year, but I feel like it was on her Instagram were these tiny little squares of intricate, and it'd be like a one inch square, an intricate repeating pattern, and then the next one would be slightly different. So I wonder if that's what it was.
It probably was. I've also seen those.
Mm-hmm.
Usually in like more of a scale pattern.
Mm-hmm.
But those are, you can definitely find those online. They're lovely. I've only done the screen printed ones.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones I know typically call for Aida cloth, just because it's easier to keep track of like how long something is with Aida, which is why I use it in the first place. And when I first started doing black work, I hadn't really done a lot of cross stitch yet, and I didn't really. I wasn't really comfortable using Aida yet.
Okay.
But now that I am. Yes, it's time to go back in and do some more black work.
Nice. It's fun. So are you able to, is embroidery something you're able to do while you watch TV? While you, like, is it something that you're able to do with something else? You're shaking your head, so.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
It's great. If I'm listening to an audiobook, it's great. I can do something with my hands, and I listen to a lot of nonfiction audiobooks, so I learn a lot about, like, the natural world while I'm embroidering or watching TV, because, you know, sometimes shows are good enough to watch, but not enough so much that, like, they have your full attention.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of going on my phone, I just like pick up my embroidery and I do that.
Nice.
So the ADHD makes it really possible for me to focus on two things at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, I just finally got diagnosed like a few months ago. So
me too.
Yeah. I'm hopefully this week, like we've been like testing different medicines and stuff, and have you gotten to try medicine yet?
I have. Oh my God. Right? It's so life altering.
Yeah.
Did you know that other people can like get up and do dishes and not spend an hour thinking about getting up to do dishes?
I have heard about that and then experienced it.
That's so wild.
Yeah. Now, I didn't take any today because it wasn't a work day. So did I lie on the couch for an hour before our interview thinking like, you just got to send her the link. You just got to send her the link. You can do it from your phone. You just got to send her the link. That's fill up exactly. your water, send her the link, and go to your computer. And for truly an hour.
That's exactly what it's like.
Yeah.
That's why it's so funny to me when people are like, it's just like speed. And I was like, it's not if you have ADHD. Like, it's literally just like the most basic tool to accomplish really basic things.
Yeah. I have found that I can do, like, on the days I take it and I'm at home, because I definitely take it on days I go to the office. And once I'm able to get a full 30-month prescription, I will probably take it on weekends as well. But I've only been able to get 7 days at a time because the world is borked right now. Mm-hmm. But I found, like, oh, when I walk through my apartment, I can pick things up off the floor and return them to where they go and or throw them in the trash instead of walking by them and thinking like trash. Like, it is when people ask me like, what is the medicine doing for you? And I'm like, I'm throwing things away. I may need in the future fewer trash cans in my house because I might be able to walk trash all the way to the kitchen instead of have three trash cans in my living room because I just can't remember to get it all the way to the kitchen.
Yeah, or you get stopped halfway there by something else. Right. And then you start doing that instead.
A whole nother chore, yeah.
Like, you've got, in my case, like little bits of string in random places because like you didn't quite make it to the trash can, but it's halfway there. That counts, right.
So that's been remarkable to me, and so has being able to be interrupted and then return to my task. I don't know if that's helped you at all, but it's been remarkable.
I don't know. I think it made my thoughts more orderly, which I wasn't expecting. I didn't realize how like chaotic my thought process is generally.
Mm-hmm.
And how just completely disorganized I am. Like, I knew that I was kind of a circular thinker, but I didn't know that, like, it's
the
just...
full extent.
It's full-on chaos in there! Mm-hmm. And that, like, other people apparently aren't like this.
Right. Right. Yeah, it feels really unfair once you realize, like, this is... other people just live like this.
Yeah. They wake up like this.
Yeah.
What is that? That's so weird.
It's so unfair.
Which is funny because when I started doing interviews for my chapbook, people are like, they keep coming up with different variations on the question of like, how are you so weird? And I just don't know how to tell them that like my brain is fundamentally different.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. My brain.
You're like, look, I put the divergent in neurodivergent. What do you want from me?
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point we're all entertained by it. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, why is my podcast one where I talk about a different subject every week and don't learn about anything in depth? If not undiagnosed ADHD.
I went to a college that basically just operates that way.
Oh, really?
I went to Sarah Lawrence, where you don't have majors. There's no majors. There's no, like, basic core requirements to be met. And you basically, and every semester you take three courses where basically you write one paper, like the entire semester, you're working on this like giant paper that focuses on a different subject.
So you got to do a bachelor's in hyperfocus.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. I studied chemistry and had a faculty that said, Leah, we understand this is not your future, but we also want you to graduate. So we're waiving these requirements and you are going to study abroad because we know this is not your future and you just need to do something else for a little bit.
Well, that was very kind of them.
I have sent them many thank you notes as I've gotten, you know, now I'm 45 and I have sent at least 3 thank you notes, I think, over the years to say thank you for seeing what I could not, which is that my future was not in a lab. So.
Yeah, I imagine that would be hard to do with ADHD.
It was brutal.
Yeah.
Sit alone in a lab all day, rotovapping, like evaporating essential oil of catnip from it to see if nepetalactone has insecticidal properties that are stronger than DEET. Like, it was a rough summer. And I would go to the cafeteria after a day of rotary evaporation and I would just be a motor mouth at dinner. And people were like, what happened? I'm like, I was alone in a cabin today. And they put that in a cabin because if it explodes, they don't want you exploding it in the main building.
Oh, my God.
So I was not cut out for life and chemistry.
Yeah, I imagine there's a lot of repetition with that kind of thing.
Constant repetition. Oh my God. It's repetition and it has to be exact every time.
Mm-hmm. I could never do that.
No. And nobody really understood, I think, why it was so hard. And it's because I had undiagnosed ADHD.
Yeah.
Oh, it changes everything.
It really does.
Rewrite a whole personal history.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you get to look back at like your entire academic career and be like, I did really well considering what was going on. Like,
right. Yeah. I am someone who learned about ADHD in women from TikTok and then went and pursued a diagnosis because of what I was learning. And one of the memes that got to me was people talking about rough drafts and like, what is a rough draft supposed to be? And people with ADHD, so I'd write my final paper and then I would make it worse. Turn that in as a rough draft. I didn't ever do this, but I never understood the point of a rough draft or an outline. I'm like, but I'll just write the thing. Why would I do a third of the project when I could just do the project?
Okay, that's really interesting. I don't really do rough drafts either.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm incapable of seeing like a problem and not immediately trying to fix it.
Right.
So when people are like, yeah, this is rough draft, I was like, what is a rough draft? Like,
right.
Tell me what you mean by a rough draft.
Right.
I still don't know how to do rough drafts. I feel like I'm usually like 3 edits in by the time it's like a rough draft to me.
Yeah. I got through grad school by giving friends my first draft and they would just do a copy edit and give it back to me. But nobody was saying like, oh, you need, there were no major rewrites or like, it was people catching the, you know, MLA or whatever sourcing I was doing and maybe in copy editing. But yeah, the whole idea of a rough draft, that was like the TikTok conversation that I was like, oh, I really identify with that because I never understood why not just do it the first time.
Yeah, I get that. Except I didn't have TikTok. I had Twitter. I had mm-hmm. ADHD Twitter. And I was like, oh, all yeah. those weird things about me can be grouped yeah. under a heading.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the problem with having a diagnosis that's built around like 12-year-old Viennese boys.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not going to look the same on adults or on women or on anyone who doesn't fit that very specific group.
Yeah.
I didn't know what ADHD was if it wasn't hyperactivity. I didn't realize that hyperactivity also counts your brain. Like, your brain counts as being hyperactive.
Right. Yeah, and stuff like just like I would just read for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and just read voraciously. But that's good behavior. So like nobody groks that as like being anything other than being like good.
Right. So but it's hyper-focus, right?
It's hyper-focus, right.
Oh, I have to say, I do love hyperfocus. I've written some of my best stories on hyperfocus.
Yeah.
Just because, like, you completely zone in on exactly what you're trying to say. You get it all out. Especially since I write flash fiction and microfiction.
Right.
You really can knock it out in one sitting of hyperfocus. Yeah. And then you've got this thing, and you're like, where did you come from?
Mm-hmm.
The very deep recesses of my brain.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just something how long ago were you diagnosed?
May.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
So you are also learning a lot about it now too.
I am. Yeah, I've read some books. The books help.
Yeah.
The books are the ones that really made me realize that, like, it is true. It's not just like a Twitter thing. Like,
yeah,
there's an actual psychologist who can say that I do have those traits.
Yeah.
Even though, like, every single person I knew at that point who had ADHD was a guy who had been diagnosed in, like, middle school or something.
Yeah.
But it's funny because the more I talk to people about it, the more people that I know get diagnosed.
Yeah. Because
you know how, like, neurodiverse people tend to clump together?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like that.
Yeah.
Everyone's getting diagnosed now.
That is happening, too. A lot of my friends, it feels like, in the last year have pursued a diagnosis or learned about it. Absolutely. I did the test in September and it's January. So I must have, in October, I think I got the results and we've been trying to get the dosage right on medicine ever since. So I think this week is the week I finally get a whole month written out prescription. Ooh. Yeah. And then I try to find a pharmacy that has it in stock.
That is definitely the next challenge because not everybody does.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Chelsea, that was a good tangent. It was a great tangent. Is there anything about embroidery or sashiko stitching or cross stitch that we haven't talked about or projects we haven't talked about that you want to mention or creators, like pattern creators that you love that you haven't mentioned that you want to get in before we wrap up?
I mean, I guess I would definitely like to say that it's a lot easier than it looks.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it can look kind of scary and like you may not be able to do it, but it's a lot easier than you probably think it is. It just takes like the time to actually do it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to do something with your hands while your brain is otherwise occupied.
Yep.
It's not just for grandmas anymore. It's not. There are a lot of really, really interesting and like subversive patterns out there. And there really is something for everyone. So if it seems like something you might want to try, go for it. I mean, you're going to have fun. It's going to be great.
And it's a pretty low cost investment to try.
It is. Yeah. I mean, So if you get like a pattern off of Etsy, that might run you like maybe $5.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ada itself isn't that expensive. And like the thread isn't that expensive either. And it is maybe my cheapest hobby. I have a tendency to pick hobbies that are like kind of expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is extremely affordable and you get like an actual physical object out of it, which I really appreciate. Like you can decorate your home with it.
Yeah.
You can give it as presents, which is what I did a lot at Christmas.
Fantastic.
I made my friend like this tiny little like ornament sized one and it was like a llama with bulbs and it was just very festive and fun. Like this is exactly what I want to be doing. I want to be making like weirdly personal stuff.
It's great.
I know.
Awesome. Well, Chelsea, this has been a delight. Where can people find you online?
So I'm on Twitter at Chelsea_Stickle, and someone's already got that on Instagram. So on Instagram, I'm Stickle_Chelsea, which is definitely a place where you can check out my embroidery and my bunny. It's very embroidery and bunny heavy.
Nice. And what is your bunny's name?
His name is George.
And bunnies were another item on your list.
Yes.
Are you a lifetime bunny person, or is George your first bunny pet?
George is my first, but only because I wasn't allowed to get one when I was a kid.
Yeah.
They are actually high maintenance animals, so you can't just like get a bunny and cross your fingers and hope that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
You do actually have to learn like really weird things about them and their functioning. But I am so thrilled to have him. He is fabulous and he's definitely gotten me through this pandemic for sure.
Yeah, I've learned a few of my friends have bunnies and I have learned that they are they're high maintenance pets and they're really for people that want low effort pets, they are the wrong pet.
Yeah, no, you should definitely be getting a cat if you would like some low effort.
Yeah, great. And the chapbook is available. People can order it now through your publisher.
Yes, through 30 West Publishing.
And it'll be linked in the show notes and you can keep checking out 30 West Publishing and Chelsea's website for information on the Zoom event coming soon to an internet near you.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now go out and enjoy your favorite things.